This is ESPN 103.7 Lafayette and 104.1 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station. They say good things come in threes.
Cause it's one, two, three.
Time to test that theory. Here is RP3, D'Lo, and Mesh.
Welcome into the show. It's Friday, and we're here at Walk-Ons on Colley Saloon, our home away from home, every Friday here for RP3 D'Lo Amesh. I'm Raymond Parts III, better known as RP3, the big, bald, bearded, and beautiful one. Of course, I'm joined by the man with the best hair in sports talk radio in Mississippi and the state of Louisiana, James Mesh. Good day, sir.
Well, what about Arkansas?
Look. Let's not get greedy. We're working on that. We're working on that. Okay.
Like I know there's a huge market for Texas. Of course, there's a lot of big cities: Houston, San Antonio, Dallas. Like I know there's going to be a lot of competition there. But what are we working with Arkansas?
What are we working with? The man wants to know, what are we working with? We'll get to that. Oh, man, we got a great show lined up for you today. We do have a D-Lo's details for you. That'll be coming up in hour number two. Our guy took the day off. He's got a wedding this weekend to prepare for, so it's just yours truly and Mr. Mesh. But we do have a little Dawson for you with the details coming up in hour number two. We have two guests lined up for you today coming up at 11:30 from the Daily Advertiser. He covers LSU athletics. He's in Greenville for the SEC Women's Tournament, covering the defending national champs. Corey Diaz will be joining us to talk all things LSU women's basketball. That'll be coming up at 11:30. And then at 12:30 today, our buddy Jimmy G from LC, the king of all sports talk media, and just media, sports media in general, in the Lake Chuck. Jim Gazzolo will join us to talk all things McNeese. Cowboys men's basketball team wrapped up the one seed, and they're gearing up two wins away from the NCAA tournament. Baseball is
they got a tough matchup this weekend.
Playing another top 10 ranked team in the country on the road, nonetheless, when they have to go to Arkansas. They were supposed to start that series today. Weather postponed it, so they'll be playing a doubleheader on Saturday. So we'll talk McNeese football, baseball, softball, and basketball with Jimmy G coming up in hour number two. Of course, we'd love to hear from you. You want to dial the Mike's Marine hotline, chop it up with us, you can. Toll free, it's 337-706-0111. Okay, 337-706-0111. Mike's Marine, keeping you on the water. We do have our poll question of the day. On Fridays, it is our foodie question of the week. I had nothing to do with this. This was the brainchild of the man sitting to my left here at Walk-Ons on Colley Saloon. But our guy, BP, Blake Purser, back in the EFCO Development Studios, holding it down. My friend, can you tell us what our poll question of the day is? What are the most up-to-date results, and what comments do we have so far on said poll via the Facebook and the X?
Yeah, I think I can do that for you guys. I believe so. So, today's foodie poll question of the day is, what is your favorite type of berry? Excuse me, I had to cough. Strawberry, blueberry, raspberry, or other. Strawberry is
great start.
Absolutely blowing everything out of the water. 63% of the vote going to strawberry. Blueberry racking up 22.2%, and raspberry and other are each sharing 7.4%. Did the rain just happen over there? What happened?
They're dumping ice.
I think a waterfall just came in.
It's not a waterfall. Thank you, BP.
My favorite comment, though, so far, is Boxcar Bergeron's answer of New Iberia. I'm a big fan of that answer.
Oh, I am a big fan of that because it is known as the Berry. I worked there for a few years. Shout out to the Berry.
Oh, absolutely.
New Iberia.
And it was funny because the...
You should have made that one of the options.
It was so funny. When I first came up with that poll question, that was late last night, and I was like, Why don't we just do a poll question on berries? You're so random. It was very random.
And I was like, okay.
You were like, I'm not mentally prepared for this, and I'm like, I totally understand because this one came out of left field. But I was like, of course you got to do strawberries, blueberries. But then it's like, do you do raspberries?
Boysenberry.
Do you do boysenberry? There's a cloudberry.
You know, grape is technically a berry.
We learned that during footnotes.
Well, Foot said cherries earlier, so I think that was a good answer, even though it's not a berry in the slightest.
There it is. And then, of course, we have the Barry, New Iberia.
Yeah. And so I was thinking about bringing that as one of the options because I knew it'd be funny. But I was awaiting for someone to actually put it in the comments, and Ralph always delivers.
Call Boxcar Bergeron always steps up. So keep those votes coming on our Foodie Poll Question of the Week, which is always our poll question of the day on Fridays. Leave your comments on Facebook and X, and our guy BP will share them throughout today's show. Whew. But you know what we got to do next? What we always do at this time.
That's our today's specials.
The fellas can't help you with your lunch plans. But they can serve up the top stories of the day in bite-sized pieces. Order up. Time to order up today's specials on RP3, D-Lo, and Mesh.
You know, there's dedication to your team. And then there's this type of dedication to your team. So, you remember the Kansas City Chiefs playoff game there at Arrowhead Stadium against the Miami Dolphins?
Yeah.
Back on January 13th, it was minus 4 degrees Fahrenheit and wind chills measured at negative 20 at kickoff.
It was the fourth coldest game in NFL history?
Fourth coldest game in NFL history.
If I'm not mistaken.
Chiefs fans, though, Chiefs Kingdom, they came out in full force to support their team as they would end up going on to winning the Super Bowl. But that was the last home game, right? They played that. That was wild card weekend. Then
correct.
They had to go on the road, beat Buffalo, and then beat Baltimore, and then go on to win the Super Bowl yet again. Well, they got to win, right, 26-7. So that is a great thing. And you could say that you were there for that 26-7 victory over the Dolphins in the fourth coldest game in NFL history. But a game where Andy Reid's mustache froze and Patrick Mahomes' helmet shattered upon impact because of the weather.
Good thing they had the backup.
They had the backup. Well, some bad things happened. So fans suffered from frostbite. Dozens of fans that attended the game there at Arrowhead Stadium suffered from frostbite and were transported to the hospital with hypothermia-related injuries. That's according to the Kansas City Fire Department spokesperson. Now, according to NextStar's WDAF, Dr. Megan Garcia, the medical director of the Grossman Burn Center in Kansas City, 70% of the patients admitted due to frostbite, 70%.
It's a big percentage.
During that extreme cold weather game, have now been advised by medical personnel to undergo amputation. To undergo amputation. Like, I love my team. I love my teams. I have my teams. I love my teams. I don't root for anybody else. I'm not that type of person that has multiple teams that they root for or support. I think that's nonsense. I'm faithful to my wife. Guess what? I'm faithful to my sports teams. I don't root for multiple teams. Okay, I don't have time to have flirtations with other teams or, you know, lady friends on the sides with the sports fan.
Why'd you nudge me when you did that?
Well, truth hurts. Truth hurts. But let me tell you something. Let me tell you something. And I've been to some cold games, and I've had to bundle up. There is no scenario where I'm going to put myself in a situation to suffer frostbite and then have to amputate a limb for a playoff game. Never going to happen. Never going to happen. I will sit my big, bald, bearded, beautiful self in a recliner and watch the game from home. I am not.
Snuggled up in a blanket.
Maybe a Snuggie. Those are still things, apparently. I am not going to put myself in harm to get frostbite. Frostbite. Now, according to the NFL Games Operations Policy Manual, this is courtesy of USA Today, the stadium must have a snow and ice removal plan before the scheduled game in cold or snowy weather. The manual goes on to say that, quote, if weather dictates, heated benches must be available to both teams and activate 2 hours prior to kickoff. The manual does not provide guidance on whether to postpone the game in dangerously cold weather or how fans should approach extreme temperatures. It's unclear if the NFL will review its cold weather policy after this season. So a medical expert says 70% of the fans that were admitted for frostbite injuries, they are recommended that they go through the amputation process. There you go. That's dedication, man. That's dedication for your team.
It's dedication. I'd also say it's no es bueno.
It's insanity.
No good. Not optimal.
That's what I like
but
to
here,
say.
But,
not
here, but here's the thing.
Oh, here it is. Okay.
At least they got the Super Bowl out of it.
Oh, there you go.
At least they got the Super Bowl.
I guess that would lead, we can't do it today because it's a poll, because it's a foodie question. But we're going to save this. Put this in our back pocket, say, for Monday.
Oh, absolutely.
Would you be willing to sacrifice a limb for your team to win a world championship?
I'll give you my answer on Monday. For my special, we're getting close to the NFL draft. I know we're still a little more than a month and a half away.
No, bud, the combine is in the books. It is draft mocks. It's draft season. It's mock season.
I was getting to that. I was saying the actual NFL draft is at the end of April. We're still at the beginning of March, bud.
Okay.
But yes, it is mock draft season. I know a lot of people have been out there doing it for a little minute. They've been doing it basically since January.
But they don't do it as well as my boy James Mesh does.
Correct. That's partially of the reason why I got the job, was because of how well my first one.
No, that's true. We brought him on, and we wanted to see what he was passionate about. He says, well, I love doing mock drafts. And I said, well, why don't you type up some mock drafts? You came on Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love.
Absolutely.
Previewing it, and then you did some mock drafts. And I was like, well, this guy, I should hire him. He's smart.
Well, it was funny because while Clint was running the boards when he was still producer for Bumper to Bumper Sports, and I would sit in on those Monday and Fridays, I would be doing mock drafts because I was sitting there with the clicker for TV. So in the meantime, I would do mock drafts. He noticed Ben Love when he came in between breaks had also noticed. And he was like, might have an idea. And then he went to you. And
yep. That's
basically how it all went down. But yes, I have started this year's Mesh's Mock Draft 1.0. You can check it out on ESPN Southwest Louisiana. I'm not going to go through all 32 picks. I'm only going to go through a couple.
All right, let's look. We got some time here. We got some time.
We do have a little bit of time.
So break down the top three. Are you doing what everyone else is doing?
Currently, I have three quarterbacks going in the top three. Of course, I have Caleb Williams going to the Chicago Bears. I mean, that's pretty much as much of a consensus as you could say. Usually it's how it was, like whenever Trevor Lawrence went 101 for the Jags, how
gotcha.
Joe Burrow went to the Bengals.
Absolutely.
So I have Caleb Williams going Chicago Bears at the 101, the first overall pick. For the Washington Commanders, are you ready for this one?
You better give me good news.
I've got your team, the Commanders, going with Jaden Daniels.
Yes. Yes, let's go.
Absolutely.
Let's go. That's the guy I want. That's the guy I want my Commanders to draft. Now, whether or not they will and they fall in love with the North Carolina quarterback.
Speaking of those North Carolina quarterbacks, I have Drake May going to the New England Patriots, which is interesting. There's a lot of smoke. There's a lot of smoke screen going on. This is smoke screen season. You can never really trust exactly what reports are going out there.
Oh, it's lying season for
sure. It's absolutely lying season. I saw a report saying that if Jaden Daniels gets taken before the third overall pick, which if it falls the first two picks like how I have right now, the Patriots are really looking to trade that third overall pick, which to me sounds like they're looking for a quarterback, but they don't want to take Drake May at the third pick. They'd rather take either him later or get someone else at more of a bargain deal.
They are not a quarterback away. They're just not a quarterback away.
They are not. But if you can get your quarterback of the future, who's to say you don't do it?
I know.
But that's what I'm saying. I'm saying if you are going to get Drake May and you are that sold on him, you trade back to the 9, 10, 11, 12th pick. Let someone else take Drake May if that's the case, if they really want him that bad at 3. And then you take J.J. McCarthy, take Michael Penix, Bo Nix later on in the draft. One interesting pick that I did, however, we were talking about this when we went to Lake Charles on Monday.
That's right. We were in the Chuck.
We were in the Chuck.
For senior night for the McNeese men's basketball team. It was a tremendous.
Absolutely. And we had a lovely conversation talking about the Los Angeles Chargers. Now that Jim Harbaugh is the head coach for them, it's interesting to see what they're going to do because he's more of an offensive guy, and their tight end room is pretty bare. They're going to be moving on from one guy, Gerald Everett. And then Donald Parham just hasn't worked out for him. So it's not looking the best. So I have them taking the best tight end prospect that we've seen since Kyle Pitts. Maybe he's better, according to some people. I have them taking Brock Bowers at the 105. Now, that doesn't mean that they couldn't trade back and even take him later in the draft, even before the Saints. But whether they take him at the 105 or 110, 111, 112, I still think he goes before the Saints. So, Saints fans, you won't even be able to get him. Speaking of the Saints.
I agree with you. Even if it's not Los Angeles, I don't think it matters.
Like, someone's going to take him.
I agree.
Because of how good a talent he is. Looking at the Saints, however, I know that a lot of people are like, well, let's go get a wide receiver. Are we going to be able to get a quarterback? You're not going to be able to get a quarterback because you just basically tied yourself to Derek Carr even more for the next couple of years. So you'd rather try and address other positions. I have them taking an offensive lineman. I have them taking Washington's Troy Fautanu.
Great job with pronouncing the name.
Yeah, I'm trying my best. There's a couple others that really worry me that I'm going to hold off right now from trying to pronounce. But I have them taking Troy Fautanu. I know that with Clint Kubiak, the likelihood that they're going to go with more of a zone scheme is very high. And what does Washington run? A zone scheme.
Kubiak, yes.
So it feels like it's a match made in heaven. I know a lot of people are looking at J.C. Latham, Amarius Mims from Georgia, Joe Alt, but the likelihood that Joe Alt's going to be even there at 14, not very high.
You're talking about the Notre Dame offensive lineman.
Correct. I think Troy Fautanu, I may change it up in these next couple of mock drafts. Maybe I take a wide receiver. Maybe I take an edge rusher. But I think if the Saints are going to go offensive lineman, I think they take the guy out of the former Husky, Fautanu.
There you go. There's our today's specials to lead things off. We got to take a timeout. When we come back, we'll react to each other's today's specials, and we'll take your phone calls if you want to get them in. Remember, Mike's Marine Hotline is open, 337-706-0111. That's 337-706-0111. Mike's Marine keeping you on the water. You're listening to RP3 D'Lo and Mesh live from Walk-Ons on Collie Saloon right here on ESPN, Southwest Louisiana Sports Station.
Time for us to head back out to Walk On Sports Bistro for more RP3, D'Lo and Mesh, here on ESPN 103.7 Lafayette and 104.1 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station.
Welcome back in to RP3, D'Lo and Mesh. I'm Raymond Parts III. I'm joined by James Mesh. Don't call him Jimmy.
Definitely don't.
Not a thing.
Nope.
Not Jimmy.
Nope.
Not Jim. Not Jimbo.
No. Not Jim Bob.
Not Jim Bob. None of that. It's James. It's what he prefers.
Yeah, I can take it.
All right, so I want to react to your mock draft.
Yeah, go ahead.
We've talked about this on the show. I know it's your first one, and we're going to get more information as we lead up to the draft.
Yeah,
are we really for certain that three quarterbacks are going to be taken with the three picks by those three teams? Like, what's the likelihood, seriously?
I don't think it's all that likely for it to be that specific. I do think wholeheartedly that Caleb Williams is going to go first overall, and there's going to be no way that Chicago is able to trade the 101, the first overall pick in this year's draft. So I think that's almost as much of a lock as you can have.
Okay.
And then I know that there's been a lot of talk of Jaden Daniels going to be top five, top three, and then all of a sudden there was a report after the combine that basically because he didn't do any of the physical stuff, he just did interviews, he's now all of a sudden dropping off of people's boards, which I don't believe at all.
No, I don't believe that at all. That's a complete smokescreen.
And then you look at what had happened with the Patriots, how they're saying, well, if we can't get Jaden Daniels at three, then we're going to trade out. I really think that that's a real possibility because Washington, they could use a quarterback. They could use quite a few things.
Oh, they could use it, yes.
But I think Jaden Daniels just works really well because I know Cliff Kingsbury has been kind of – hasn't had the best success offensively. But I think him going number two to Washington makes sense. I think the outlier of those three would be Drake May. I think if someone else is going to fall in love, they will trade with New England. New England gets a good bit of assets back, bunch of draft capital, maybe a player, who knows, when it comes to – but I don't think that happens until draft day, until we see what happens with those first two picks. So, no, specifically it going in order of Caleb, Jaden, then Drake, all to exactly Chicago, Washington, and New England, I don't think that that's all that likely.
And to your point, like, and I've mentioned this before, depending on what happens where – you know, we're getting the reports that Russell Wilson has visited with the Giants. He's visiting with the Steelers. The Raiders are interested as well. So Russ will be one of those pieces that will fall. You'll have Justin Fields. They'll trade him as well. So he'll be another guy that will be kind of off the board. But I do believe you're going to see someone get aggressive. And I keep talking about the Raiders because Antonio Pierce has mentioned that they need to get themselves a quarterback. Minnesota, Denver, and the Raiders. Those are the three teams in front of New Orleans in the draft order. I think those are your three biggest your candidates, if you will, of being aggressive and trading up into the top 10, maybe even trading up into the top 5 to go get one of those quarterbacks.
Sleeper team, though, that may trade up, depending on what happens in free agency and what happens with trades. If Atlanta's not able to get Justin Fields and they're not able to get Kirk Cousins,
they
are a very real possibility be, yes. Because who's to say New England at 3 doesn't want to only trade back 5 instead of trading back 8, 9, 10 picks?
Correct.
Into the early teens.
Correct. They could be an absolute wild card in that regard when it comes to the draft and the quarterbacks taken. Let's head out to the Mike's Marine Hotline. Welcome on Frank, who's been patiently waiting. Frank, good day to you, brother. What's on your mind, bud?
Oh, not a lot. I got a question for y'all, and I've been hearing about this for the last couple of days. Moscona talked about it yesterday afternoon. What's going on with the Michael Thomas situation? Did he get traded? Did he get cut? I'm seeing things on Facebook, but nothing's clear.
So I'll jump in, Frank. So it all started with a report by Jeff Duncan of The Advocate and NOLA.com saying that his sources have told him that they were going to be parting ways with Michael Thomas, that he was going to get cut. Now, the problem there is that we do believe that the contract is not one that he's going to be cut because it was only a one-year deal with another option. But that inspired Michael Thomas to go onto a social media rant, calling Jeff Duncan names, you know, basically saying that he's trash, and so forth and so forth, and kind of went on a Twitter tirade, if you will. I did reach out to people that I trust, sources I trust, and they do say that they are going to be parting ways with Mike, that he's not going to be coming back. But, yes, the current contract is a one-year deal with the signing bonus. Go ahead, James. Go ahead and break that down for us, what the actual deal is.
Yeah, so technically I know that Mike said that he was only on a one-year contract, but that was to kind of maneuver it to where he only had 1 year left after the season. He's still under contract this year, upcoming in 2024. He did a base salary of $1.2 million, and then with the restructuring, it's $7 million, a cap hit of $12 million, and then if they were to move on from him, it would be a dead cap of over $20 million. But technically, he still is on the team. He's not a free agent. So the cutting is correct. It's the correct terminology.
Well, this is nothing news. I mean, Peyton did it with – he did it with Jimmy Graham. He did it with Brandon Cooks. If you ask me, this is overdue. I think he's a bit of a mouthpiece in the locker room, but I'm not the head coach of the Saints.
Well, I think, look, we can make an argument that it would have been time for them to part ways with him the last couple of years, right? Because this isn't the first time things have flared up between he and the team or he and the front office, right? So,
or just him on Twitter.
Or just him being on Twitter. So, you could feel it last year for sure that it was going to be coming to an end. They're going to move on. And here's the reality. Take away the social media stuff. Take away blasting Jeff Duncan on social media. The reality is that he can't – he has no availability, Frank. He doesn't bring anything to the table because he doesn't play, right? Because he's always hurt. So, and this has been 4 years. He was amazing, phenomenal, will probably go down as the greatest wide receiver in Saints history, even though I think Marcus Colston probably still holds that title, but that's just me. I think it's a debate. But what he did when he was Offensive Player of the Year was amazing, but he's nowhere near being that guy, and he's been injury prone for 4 years. You got to move on, start fresh, and maybe go draft yourself a wide receiver in the draft or go pick up a mid-tier free agent.
Well, I agree with you on the Marcus Colston aspect, and thank you all for answering the question. Y'all have a great day and a wonderful weekend, boys.
You too, brother. Appreciate the phone call. Yeah, I look, and I know a lot of people say Mike is the guy. I just was there a better Saints wide receiver in franchise history for those 3 to 4 years of Mike's early part of his career? No.
But Marcus's longevity and the fact that he was always consistent. He never got injured. Like, he had so many 1,000-yard seasons. But
never got injured, was always Mr. Reliable. I'll take that. I know, and that's always the debate. A lot of people, a lot of people love the guy that's the comet, right? He blasts through the sky, and it's a very brief, but it's a phenomenal experience. It's great. And I know a lot of people love that. I love stability, especially when it comes to my franchise. And I want a guy that's going to be consistent day in, day out, year in, year out. That's what Marcus Colston was for the Saints, and that's why I view him as the best wide receiver in franchise history. I know Mike rewrote the NFL record books, James.
Yeah.
And look, there wasn't a better wide receiver in the NFL during about a 3-year stretch when Mike was healthy. But the cat has been injured for 4 years, and that's got to be taken part in this discussion.
Correct. And I'm not taking anything away from what Michael Thomas did in that 4-year span when he was a rookie up till that record-breaking 2019 season when he had 149 catches. But here's the thing. They moved on from Brandon Cooks because of how much Mike had stepped up in his rookie season. But following that, Ted Ginn was not what he was early on in his career. Willie Snead was a solid slot choice, but he wasn't a consistent receiver as well. The receiving room, it was Michael Thomas all the way at the top. And then everyone else was all the way down here. Like, I'm not saying that he was getting force-fed by Drew Brees and Sean Payton, but there was really no one else to consistently go to out wide. Like, it was just Michael Thomas. We got to get it to him because he gives us our best option.
It was Michael Thomas and a bunch of guys that Saints beat reporters would write profiles on during training camp and made you believe that they were going to have breakout seasons, and then they never did. Well, we can have that Thomas Colston debate and also throw in Eric Martin in there as the greatest wide receivers in Saints history. Maybe we'll make it a poll question for next week. Look, we're just stacking up that stuff for next week. But right now, we got to take a timeout. When we come back, we're going to go out to Greenville, talk to our guy Corey Diaz from the Daily Advertiser, LSU women gearing up for the SEC tournament. They're going to take on Auburn later on today, 5 o'clock tip. You can hear it on our sister station, Mustang 107.1. That's coming up next right here on ESPN, Southwest Louisiana Sports Station.
RP3, D'Lo, and Mesh are tackling the topics of the day live from Walk On Sports Bistro. This is ESPN, 103.7 Lafayette and 104.1 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station.
You know, I often state with confidence, the utmost confidence, that the man sitting to my left has the best head of hair in sports talk radio in the states of Louisiana and Mississippi. But
specifically sports talk.
Sports talk.
Radio.
Because if we included the traditional sports media of print journalism or websites, then our next guest would, well,
he'd take the cake.
He would take the cake. He would take the crown. He covers the LSU Tigers for the Daily Advertiser in Gannett. He's in Greenville right now covering the SEC tournament. It's our good friend Corey Diaz. Corey, good day to you, brother. How are you?
What's going on, guys? How are y'all doing?
So how do you feel about being bestowed with the title of having the best head of hair in sports print media in the state of Louisiana?
Well, had someone else not let their locks go, I'd still probably be sitting second right now. So so I suppose I'll happily accept.
Are you saying that you would be second to our good friend, our mutual friend, Adam Hunsucker?
No, I was actually referring to you, buddy.
Oh, dude, I have not shaved off my head in a long time. I have not had hair to cut in a long time. I appreciate you. 2000, 2001, 2002 was a long time ago, brother. All right. Let's, you know, I want to talk about, we'll get to the matchup against Auburn, which is immensely intriguing, third one this season for Kim Mulkey's team. But I want to talk about what appears to be this team turning a corner. And I want to start off with Haley Van Lith, because she was on the struggle bus, man. And you and I have talked about it off the air, how she seemed like a square peg in a round hole situation. And then something clicked where her shot started to drop and she started playing better defense. What happened?
Yeah, you know, I think, man, I really chalk it up to just time. You know, she hasn't played the point guard position since high school. You know, she's been out of high school for 4 years. This is her fourth year out of high school. And, you know, Kim says it, and I think everyone agrees. I mean, it's the hardest position, you know, to play out there on the court. You have to be fully aware of what your four teammates that are on the court with you. You have to be aware of what they're doing, what their responsibilities are, on top of what you have to do in your responsibilities. I think it's just taking her time. I mean, you know, obviously I think everyone in a perfect world, right, would have loved for Haley to come in and it only take her a handful of games, you know, but I just don't think that's reality. I think it's harder to – it's a lot harder to come in and to learn that position. You know, again, and underneath, you know, someone who played the position and played it very well when she played the game, you know, back in the 80s. And so, obviously, there was a lot of demand there. You know, Kim, regardless of the BD1's background, you know, obviously she's not going to bring in players that she doesn't believe in their talent and their ability. And she's a very demanding coach. And I think there just had to be time for Haley to come in and not only grasp, you know, the offensive system that they run, you know, what it would take to play better. And also, too, you couple that with learning Kim as a coach and what she expects and her demands and finding a balance with that as well. And I think we're, you know, obviously, you know, coming out of that, you know, that idle week that they had after the Mississippi State loss and, you know, Kim shuffling up the rotations a little bit more and getting last year Poa on the court more and slotting Haley more over to the two guard. That certainly has helped. And I think that's really sort of sparked her to being able to, you know, kind of go back to a position that she feels more, you know, that she feels more comfortable in. And I think that was the basis of her, you know, of this increase in confidence that we've seen over the last month. And I think now what we're seeing is you know, it's just sort of a culmination of, you know, really what I think has been a hard year for her. And I think now she's able to play a little more relaxed and a little more free because of, obviously, she's had more time in the system. She now knows what it's going to take. And she gets more time at the position that she feels more comfortable in, too. So I think it's now, there's now that balance between, you know, playing the point guard position, but also getting time at what you love to do. And it's all coming together for her right now. And it's a perfect time.
It is a perfect time for them. I also want to talk about the other thing that stood out to me in this last month or so, well, ever really since the Mississippi State loss, is not only has Haley seemingly turned a corner, but Poa has really become part of this team. You know, it was very sporadic early in the season, despite being on the team last year. She didn't get a whole lot of playing time, and sometimes Kim would bring her into the game, and she'd be in it for like 5 minutes and then be gone, right? And we don't see her again. But she's earned Kim's trust and earned those rest of the young women's trust as well, and she's become essentially their sixth woman.
Yeah, she certainly has. You know, and I think we've seen sort of an evolution in Poa's game as well. You know, I think – you know, she, last year especially, right, you know, I can remember lots of times during the NCAA tournament run where, you know, when she did get time on the floor, I mean, give her 100 possessions, she was going to be looking to pass the ball 100 times. You know, that's what she felt like she could bring to the team was to be just purely a facilitator. And I think early on this season, too, she kind of felt like that was still her role with this team, although there's a lot of, you know, roster turnover, there's some moving parts, you know, early in the year. And you know, between Angel missing some games and Haley missing some games due to injury and Samaya Smith going down. And so I think as this season has rolled on, I think what last year has figured out that, you know, she can be a scorer for this team as well. You know, not just come in, you know, and try to get, you know, two or three quick assists. You know, I think she's still not doing it as often as I would like her to, but she is looking for her shot a little bit more. And, you know, and when you've got Anissa Morrow and Angel Reese on the inside who can just gobble up offensive rebounds, you know, it just gives them extra possessions sometimes, you know, when she's looking for her shot, you know, and that plays into this team's strengths as well. So there's kind of multi-layers there with last year that, you know, she's sort of changed up her approach a little bit. And I think it's benefited not only her, but I think it's benefited the team as a whole because her minutes on the floor have become more vital.
We're talking with Corey Diaz of the Daily Advertising, looking at the LSU women's basketball team as they get ready tonight to take on Auburn, a team that's they've really struggled with this year. But before we get into that matchup, I want to ask you, Corey, as you've seen LSU and Kim Mulkey's squad get on this 8-game win streak to end the regular season, do you think that they've been able to play the best basketball that they've been able to so far this season?
Yeah. I mean, to this point, James, I would say yes. I think what we're seeing now, I think has been the best product that we've seen of this specific team through, you know, 30 games. You know, I think Arkansas is a tough matchup because, you know, last year Arkansas, you know, about took them to overtime, you know, inside the PMAC and you know, something that, you know, LSU really struggled with early in the year this season was defending the three-point line. Well, Arkansas's whole MO is to shoot 33s a game. They're like the equivalent of the Alabama men's basketball team. They want to shoot 33s. And they end up beating Arkansas by, you know, more than 30 points, you know, almost 40, if I remember correctly off the top of my head. That was a matchup to me that I really wanted to see because I wanted to see how this team was going to perform defensively against a team that whose philosophy was in theory a bad matchup for them, and they handled it really well. So I think from then, you know, it's been finding, you know, what's going to work each night, because I think it has been, you know, something a little bit different. And I think, you know, especially early on in SEC play, you know, it was, you know, we want to make sure we get, you know, Angel the ball as much as possible. And now we're seeing, you know, Anissa really affecting the game with her defense, you know, stealing the ball and going down and getting easy buckets. We're seeing Flage, who's also evolved, and her game has changed tremendously from last year to this year, going from, you know, just finding her way as a freshman to now not only, you know, scoring 20 points a game, but also locking up, you know, the opposing team's best player, you know, defensively. And that's a role that I think Kim and her staff looked within this team for the first half of the year, and even in a handful of games of the SEC play as well. So Flage has become that, you know, that player for this team, and she's been vital. So it's been a little bit, they're winning games in different ways, you know, each time they play. And I think at this point in time in the year, that's what you need. You need to be able to know how to win games in different ways, whether you can score 99 points or, you know, or like in the case where they played Auburn, right? You know, I think they scored 62 at Auburn. They scored 71 in Baton Rouge. Like, you know, you have to win these uglier games. And so it's gonna help them out, you know, as the postseason really gets rolling, if they can continue to, you know, just win games in a multitude of different ways.
And really quickly, Corey, we only got about a minute left, but what quick preview can you give us about the Auburn Tigers? I know it's been close in both these matchups, Auburn being able to win earlier in the season.
Yeah, it's, you know, a couple things. You know, obviously they're really going to have to stop, you know, Honesty Scott Grayson. She scored 49 points on them in two games this year. I think she shot 41% from the field against LSU this year, so it needs to start there. And then also, too, Haley Van Lith and Flage and Michaela, if she plays, I think she's still to be determined whether or not she's going to play today. They're going to have to handle the on-ball pressure. You know, that's what Auburn does. You know, Anissa's struggled against, you know, Auburn this year, 10 turnovers in two games. So LSU's got to value possessions. They have to take care of the basketball. And if they can limit Honesty Scott Grayson, they should win today. But I am expecting another close game because it's just, you know, there's something about this Auburn team this year against this LSU team. It's just not a good matchup for them. So I think they just make a couple more plays than Auburn does, you know, in the second half of this game to win it, you know, say about 4 or 5, maybe 6 points.
Corey, always appreciate making the time, bud. Enjoy being out there in Greenville for the SEC tournament. We'll talk to you soon, bud.
Appreciate y'all. Take care.
That's Corey Diaz from the Daily Advertiser joining us here on RP3 D'Lo Mesh. We got to take a timeout. When we come back, we'll give you an update on the poll question of the day and wrap up hour number one. That's all next right here on ESPN Southwest Louisiana Sports Station.
Time for us to head back out to Walk On Sports Bistro for more RP3, D'Lo and Mesh, here on ESPN 103.7 Lafayette and 104.1 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station.
Welcome back to RP3, D'Lo and Mesh, wrapping up hour number one here on the program as we broadcast live from Walk-Ons on Collie Saloon. You can always come check us out here every Friday. And also remember, on Tuesdays, kids eat free, 12 and under, that is. BP, how about you let us know what's going on with the poll question of the day? It's our foodie poll question of the week.
Yeah, absolutely, and I'm going to try not to have a cough attack this time.
Yeah, that'd be preferred.
Yeah, I had tears in my eyes last go-around. So, poll question of the day is, what is your favorite type of berry? Mm-hmm. Strawberry, blueberry, raspberry, other. Why other? I don't know. There's other berries.
Because there's about a million of them.
Yeah.
That's why.
I mean, you could have thrown a boysenberry in there. But anyway, strawberry leading the way, 65.5% of the votes. Blueberry, 20.7%. Raspberry and other, again, sharing 6.9%.
Absolutely phenomenal. I would say for me, it would have to be strawberry. I tend to go with strawberry for my smoothies whenever I either make it at home or if I'm going somewhere else to go get my smoothies. Blueberries is a very, very strong second, however. It's almost like a 1A, 1B situation. It's not really that raspberries or blackberries or any one of these other berries are bad.
Man hates berries, other berries.
Wouldn't say that. Grapes are pretty up there as well. I would probably say that would be third on the list. But, man, I don't know how you can't beat a strawberry.
There it is. Keep those votes coming. BP back in the Evgo Development Studios will try not to choke live on the air. That would be non-optimal, especially if he needs medical attention. Then, you know, we're going to have problems having the show.
Yeah, because Dawson's not going to be able to save him, and I have no idea where Clint is.
So keep those votes coming. Keep leaving your comments on Facebook and on X. Hour one in the books. Hour two, we'll get to some NFL free agency. Former Raging Cajun got paid reportedly last night. Another one could be in for a big contract as well. We'll get to that and
come
so much
home.
More. Call, come back
come
home.
Come back home.
Come back home. Oh, man. That's all going to be coming up in hour number two, as well as our conversation with Jim Gazzolo of the Lake Charles American Press, talking all things McNeese. But that's all going to be coming up next as we broadcast live from Walk-Ons on Collie Saloon. You're listening to RP3 D'Lo Mesh right here on 103.7 Lafayette, 104.1 Lake Charles, ESPN Southwest Louisiana Sports Station.
This is ESPN 103.7 Lafayette and 104.1 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station.
They say good things come in threes.
Because it's one, two, three.
Time to test that theory.
Here is RP3, D'Lo, and Mesh.
Hour number two.
Two
of RP3, D'Lo, and Mesh. That's right. We're not in the EFCO Development Studios today. We're live at Walk-Ons on Collie Saloon. You can always come check us out every Friday if you so desire and see our mugs and our hair or lack thereof.
Warning, just heads up. James Mesh does have a great head of hair. We do not lie about that. He's also young.
So full of cap.
Young.
I am young.
He looks healthy, even though he eats like a garbage disposal. He is healthy. And when I say big and bald, people are usually alarmed when they meet me in person. And they go, oh, no, you weren't joking. No, no, no.
Oh, my God, you're 6'3". That's how it goes.
Yes. Nearly 6'4", 300 pounds. Yeah, I'm big and bald.
Left guard or right guard?
I played defensive end.
That's true. Because back in the day, you were looking for bigger
dudes. But I played defensive end and I played right guard.
Right guard. Okay.
Yeah,
there it is.
Oh, yeah. I was a big boy. So, hour one, we covered a lot of ground. We talked LSU women being at the SEC tournament with our guy Corey Diaz from the Daily Advertiser. We gave you our today's specials. James Mesh has released his first mock draft. You can go find that at ESPNSouthwestLouisiana.com. That's ESPNSouthwestLouisiana.com. Mesh's mock draft 1.0 is up on the website, so go check that out. We broke that down a little bit. I talked about the fact that there's medical professionals recommending to frostbite victims from the Chiefs-Dolphins game to get amputations. And, openly ask if anyone would be willing to give up a limb for their team to win a playoff game. Not even a Super Bowl. Not a World
playoff game? No shot.
Just a playoff game.
You're tripping.
No.
You're crazy.
World championship, that could be different. So we covered a lot of ground there. And, of course, we have our poll question of the day, which on Friday is always our foodie poll question of the week.
Oh.
So keep voting on that and leave your comments on Facebook and X. And our guy, BP, back in the EFCO Development Studios, Blake Purser, will share that with us. But you just heard James Mesh make some audible noises, which would be an indicator that something breaking has happened that he would like to share with our entire audience.
Absolutely. We don't have the sounder ready, so I'll just do it by myself. Da-na-na, da-na-na. Breaking news. It's not huge, but offensive lineman, right tackle, starting right tackle for the San Francisco 49ers, Colton McKevitz, they've got a new deal going. And if you have looked at my new mock draft 1.0 for this year, for the 2024 draft, I did have the 49ers taking Jordan Morgan, an offensive lineman, specifically a tackle. So for my Mesh's mock draft 2.0, I'm going to have to change that up.
It is interesting about San Francisco, and that kind of transitions well into NFL free agency, because we've seen so many teams this week, everyone's dumping their star safeties, their Pro Bowlers, their All Pros, because it sure does feel like they don't want to pay safeties anymore, and they just want to spend that money on corner.
Safety is the new running
back. Slot cornerbacks, yes. Safety
or,
is the new running back.
The new play.
We also found out this morning, and not a big surprise, Patrick Peterson, the former LSU superstar, has parted ways with the Pittsburgh Steelers, so he becomes a free agent. He's on the back end of his career.
Final days, if he even does play for another team.
If he does play for another team, maybe a team-friendly deal.
With the Saints?
With the Saints, and he
reunion?
Can be reunited with his boy, the Honey Badger, who the Saints did lock up. One of the few safeties that actually got signs in the last few days. The Saints lock up Tyrann Mathieu. And remember, Tyrann and Patrick were teammates. Patrick was his mentor at LSU and with the Arizona Cardinals. He kind of vouched for Honey Badger, and the Cardinals took a flyer on him, if you remember, back in the day.
Do your due diligence and bring him back on a one-year
veteran deal. Patrick's made a lot of money, but that does lead us to kind of NFL free agency. Kevin Dotson, the former Louisiana Raging Cajun, he got paid, and it's such an interesting situation for him, because Dotson, if you remember, gets drafted out of Louisiana, goes to Pittsburgh, and you think this is a perfect fit. Dotson's a mauler, interior offensive lineman. Pittsburgh loves to run the football, but the Steelers just been kind of a mess the last couple years. Kenny Pickett's not really working out.
Najee Harris isn't what we thought he was.
They're not able to run the ball as much. And when Dotson did play there towards the end, he didn't look like himself, right? And
no, he was pretty off.
You talk to Pittsburgh's fans, and they're like, well, we're not upset about him. And they traded him to the Los Angeles Rams. Well, what happens is that he goes to the Rams.
And he makes them better.
He makes them better. He becomes one of the highest-rated pro football focus interior offensive linemen in the NFL after the trade. Like, he relocates, goes in place for the Rams, and all of a sudden he looks like one of the best interior offensive linemen in the NFL. And the Rams wisely say, this guy fits perfectly in what we want to do with our offensive scheme. And they locked him up. This was last night. Adam Schefter reported on this, re-signing guard Kevin Dotson to a three-year, $48 million deal that includes $32 million in guarantees. That's right, $32 million guaranteed.
Nice.
For the former the Louisiana native and the former Louisiana Raging Cajun star offensive lineman. Now, he's the first to get paid. But if you remember, in that draft, his teammate, Robert Hunt, was part of that draft as well. He went in the second round. to the Miami Dolphins, while Dotson went in the fourth to the Pittsburgh Steelers that year. And Robert Hunt is considered one of the top 10 free agents available. That's according to Matt Bowens of ESPN. ESPN has released their top free agents available. And number one, not a surprise, Chris Jones, defensive tackle for the Kansas City Chiefs. You think Kansas City is going to find a way to bring him back?
You would assume so. All the signs with Chris Jones point towards they're going to be able to get a contract done.
Correct. Number two, Kirk Cousins, quarterback of the Minnesota Vikings.
For now.
No, for now. Number three is Christian Wilkins, defensive tackle from Miami. Dolphins are having to do a lot of purging with their roster, and we'll find out. I was surprised they couldn't figure out a way to lock up Christian. Daniel Hunter, edge rushers, number four, Baker Mayfield, your boy Baker Mayfield.
Baker Mayfield.
Quarterback for the Bucs is number five. And then Robert Hunt is number six, the guard from the Miami Dolphins. That's who he's spent his entire career with so far. Remember, he scored what appeared to be a great touchdown, ended up not being a touchdown, became something.
A huge meme.
It became a huge meme.
But it was absolutely phenomenal because you saw his athleticism, and usually when you see offensive linemen, you don't expect what he did. Like, if you are trying to remember what play we're talking about, it was a Thursday night football game against the Baltimore Ravens. They were running a screen to the right to their running back. And for some reason, Robert just gets in front of the running back.
It was amazing.
He takes it, cuts inside, and then he gets his feet taken from under him. So it's flipped in the air, and you're like, oh, God, big man, we might see an earthquake. But he makes a flip, and he somehow has the wherewithal to realize, let me extend forward and get the ball over the pylon. If he was technically a receiver on the play, because offensive lineman, you have to report as eligible if you're going to be the sixth guy, because you have to have five offensive linemen, one quarterback, and five pass catchers, whether it's a running back, tight end, or receiver. He didn't report as eligible, so the play didn't count as a touchdown, but it counts as a touchdown in our hearts.
You would think Miami would make it a priority to bring him back because you want to protect Tua, your concussion-prone quarterback. Now, to be fair, he didn't have any last year.
I was going to say, he was injury-free.
He was healthy. So you would think bringing back Hunt would be a top priority for the Dolphins. I'm kind of surprised they're letting that happen, but they're having to make some tough choices with their roster construction due to salary cap concerns. Now, behind Robert Hunt, and once again, this is ESPN's top 10 free NFL free agents. This is from Matt Bowen. And once again, number one, Chris Jones, defensive tackle for the Chiefs. Then two is Kirk Cousins. Three, Christian Wilkins. Four, Daniel Hunter. Five, Baker Mayfield. Six is Robert Hunt, the former Louisiana Raging Cajun. Number seven is Chase Young. You can have him. Number eight is Leonard Williams. Nine is Bryce Huff. And 10 is Kendall Fuller. Obviously, you had other players that got franchise tag, wide receiver T. Higgins for the Bengals. He was the first. The Chiefs tagged Snead. And once again, you tag your own players with the you try to get a long-term deal done that gives you more time to do so or to possibly trade them as well.
Right, because you saw reports of that possibly happening with the Jerry Snead and the Chiefs. But I remember before the Dolphins released Christian Wilkins, there was also reports of they were going to try and figure out if they were going to be able to do a tag and trade with him.
Correct.
That way they were able to get something out of it because he's been so good for the Dolphins in their success. The fact that they're moving on from him and then Jalen Hillis.
The free agent market, you have the probably is going to go down as the deepest and most talented free agent class for running backs that we've ever seen.
Yep.
And we know they're devalued, so we understand all of that. But so many running backs are going to be available. We've seen NFL teams gutting their rosters, taking safeties off the board, so to speak. And this is not a strong safety class either coming out of the draft. So you got a lot of safeties to choose from. You got a lot of running backs to choose from. And you got a lot of quality guys across the board. And with the salary cap going up by almost $30 million for the next fiscal year for the NFL, man, you can improve your team in a hurry here. Just take away the draft. The amount of quality players, we're talking Pro Bowlers, we're talking all pros, that are on the free agency, on the free agent market this year, this offseason?
Yeah.
It seems to be the most that I can remember in a long time.
Yeah, the fact that there's so many high price and high name free agents for both safety and running back is astonishing. I mean, it's not all that surprising, but the fact that if you look at the NFL draft, it's not like you have a Jahmyr Gibbs or a Bijan Robinson to be able to take in the first round if you're looking for a running back. Most of the guys that are going to get taken are likely going to be day three picks, but there is going to be some of the top guys like Blake Corum and others. They'll go in the second, go in the third round, but the likelihood that any one of those running backs going in the first round, not very high. I do have one safety going in the first round, and I do have him going towards the later half, towards the back half, to Buffalo. But that's also because they got rid of so many guys in their secondary. I had them taking Tyler Newbin. But for the most part, outside of him, it's not like it's a huge safety class. It's not like it's a huge running back class. So it is interesting that they are moving on from their starters, moving on from guys like Micah Hyde. They're moving on from J.C. Jackson, who's a corner, but there's plenty of guys in the secondary that are now going to be free agents and are looking for new homes. But I do wonder, is this setting up for something? And it's not just they're looking to have safety be the new running back when it comes to how do we value them with contracts, but are you setting up for the future because you want to be able to have those guys off the books, maybe bring in some others but on cheaper deals? But maybe the 2025, maybe the 2026 classes are really loaded at safety, and that's where you want to target that.
Yeah, or maybe we're just seeing a change in philosophy, right? Like we're just seeing...
You're investing so much in the quarterbacks.
And the way the modern NFL offense has kind of transformed things, the premium position, I'm old enough to grow up with like Ronnie Lott and...
Yeah,
and go through that progression.
Or he took it off himself.
even in the early 2000s, you still had Ed Reed and Troy Polamalu. Like,
love those guys.
There's not a place in the NFL for those guys anymore. They're just not. You now need, because of the restrictions that they're putting on defensive backs and how they are being allowed to play or not being allowed to play, however you want to phrase it, it's changed where... Because of the tempo, because of the high-powered passing attacks, you could argue that your slot corner is more valuable than your traditional safety. And I think that's what you're seeing here. Just like you saw NFL teams say, you know what, running back's great, but we can find guys in the fifth or sixth round, we can do running back by committee, and we can still utilize the run game that way. But you know what? The short intermediate passing game is kind of like the run game as it is.
Yep.
So I just think you're seeing that safety position, and when you're my age, I'm 45, I'll be 46 this year, seeing the safety position be devalued like this is a bit alarming, just like it was to see it with running back. But this is the evolution of the sport, and this is the evolution of the NFL, and you're seeing it play out in real time.
It's basically like a changing of the guard in a sense, because you used to be so much into, well, we need to make sure we have an absolute stud running back and make sure we have, like, it basically a bell cow, but now you're going with the running back by community. But the whole thing about the NFL, and this is what's different about the NFL than college. The college game, of course, they're not professionals, but the college game, you're either all about running the ball and you only run the ball and then you run the ball some more. Otherwise, you're looking to throw it deep. You're looking to go deep every single time. The difference with the NFL is they like to try and set up their deep passes. They consistently go short, intermediate, maybe a quick screen, maybe a quick throw to the flat, maybe a quick slant, do an option route, a whip route. I love a whip route. A lot of it is about the short and intermediate passing game, setting up the deep pass, and also setting up the run to be able to further set up the short and intermediate and deep passing game. Because of that, and how often guys are throwing nowadays, you don't have to worry as much. Like, it's still very important to run the ball, but the fact that it's all about the short and intermediate passing game, whether you're going outside to the first down line, or you're going inside, just going over the linebackers.
Correct.
In between the safeties, you have to constantly rotate the secondary. I know there's still a lot of guys out there that you want to have out there every down, like Tyrann Mathieu wasn't out there every down, but he hasn't missed a game since he's played for the New Orleans Saints.
He has not been great. But he's been good, right?
Yeah.
He's been good, and at moments he's had some great moments sprinkled into 2 years of being a good
solid
guy.
Serviceable safety.
He's on the back end of his career.
But because of that, because of how often you have to worry about running out in coverage and trying to cover those short routes, it gets tiring as a corner. It gets tired as being someone in the secondary that has to constantly worry about someone running 40 yards down the field as opposed to, well, this guy's going to try and block me, so let me shed off the block to go make the tackle.
That's why someone like Alante Taylor is so critical for with what the Saints want to do on their defense. With they got Lattimore and Adebo, but Alante is your slot guy, right? And that's so important. It is also interesting to notice, we mentioned Kevin Dotson, the former Louisiana Raging Cajun, getting paid from the Los Angeles Rams. Adam Schefter was on that yesterday. So Dotson gets paid, right?
Yeah.
Ezra Cleveland for the Jaguars has agreed on a new three-year deal worth $28.5 million with $14.5 million guaranteed. So that's roughly $9 million a year. We see Dotson get almost $25 million guaranteed. We're seeing Ezra Cleveland get $14.5 million guaranteed. I'm going to – the guard market – could very well be more expensive than you're thinking it's going to be. Because if we're having contracts for guards, three-year deals, two-year deals, roughly around $30 million each, we've seen this now with Dotson and with Cleveland, what do you think a guy like Robert Hunt's going to get? Like, I just – and once again, I circled this back to the Saints, you're going to have to probably bring Andres Pete, a.k.a. Pondwater, back.
But do you bring him back as a guard, though? You saw how well he played at tackle, and I know
I would sign him as a guard because it's going to be cheaper than what you would have to pay as a left tackle.
I mean, that's fair. But it is also good that the Saints were able to extend Cesar Ruiz before this market for the guards.
Correct. And so, you know, be interesting to see. You know, I know a lot of people, like, you know, aren't high on James Hurst. He's really a backup, and the Saints have been forced to use him as a starter far too often the last few years. But does he get poached by someone else because people are going to be desperate for interior offensive linemen? I don't know. We'll have to keep an eye on that. NFL free agency is going to be – I feel wacky. So many running backs available, but they've been devalued. So many safeties available, but they've been devalued. Guards are getting $30 million contracts, nearly fully guaranteed. So – we're going to see how this is going to work down. Let's throw it back to the EFCO Development Studios before we have to take our time out. Bring in our guy, BP, Blake Purser, with our poll question of the day. What is it, brother? What are the most up-to-date results? And what are some comments that you can share?
So far, Strawberry is still just absolutely destroying the competition. Strawberry at 64.5% of the vote. Blueberry 22.6, raspberry and other still at 6.5. Boxcar Bergeron hit us with New Iberia as his answer. It's a good answer.
Classic.
And then, that's pretty much it.
Sick. All right, cool. Well, if you want to give us your thoughts, you can always comment on our Facebook.
John Paul Cajun Daddy commented.
He did comment under Ralph's comment.
I didn't know if I could say that comment because it had alcohol in it.
No, that's fine. I got
that. That's fine.
I'm going to take care of it. John Paul says, Payday is the best candy bar. Pecan is the best pie. Hot dog is the best ballpark snack. Tomatoes don't go in gumbo. Okay. KK's biscuits and gravy is the best, and strawberries are the best berries. And also, John Paul gave me instructions on what I need to do with my job, which I appreciate that so much.
Yeah, you need to step up your game. Like, you're falling behind, dude. What are you doing?
I mean, it's technically not my job to take care of that. I gave it to the person who does. But thank you to John Paul for commenting and listening. Keep those votes coming on our poll question of the day. Leave your comments on Facebook and X. We got to take a time out. More RP3 D-Lo and Mesh coming up. We'll hear from Bob Marlin. Oh,
ooh.
They're gearing up for a game tonight against Arkansas State. If they win, they make it to the semifinals of the Sun Belt Conference Tournament. That's all coming up next right here on ESPN, Southwest Louisiana Sports Station.
The channel at your area.
Dawson Iserlo is always watching games, but maybe not the way the average fan does. Take a trip inside the mind of D-Lo with D-Lo's Details.
All right, I'm going to do it. I'm going to talk about the NFL draft. I know I haven't been in football mode. I've been focused on basketball, somewhat on baseball. I said, especially on Kevin's show, I've been telling him, look, I need some time away from football. But a story came up that I think is interesting enough for me to jump back in, at least for a little bit. And I want to talk about the top of the draft class. You know, we started with Caleb Williams a while back, and we heard these rumors, you know, maybe he's not interested in going to Chicago. And I thought it was interesting. I wanted to see how it was going to play out. I figured, you know, maybe he'll change his mind at some point here. But it was going to be interesting regardless, because this is a really deep quarterback draft class, and there are teams at the top of the draft that need a quarterback. So I want to break down the landing spots here that are possible for not only Caleb Williams, but also for Drake May and Jaden Daniels, who we think are going to be the next two to go. I know there's been some rumors recently that somebody's going to fall in love with J.J. McCarthy and take him before Jaden. I don't think that's going to happen. If it does, we'll have to reevaluate some of these at the end. But either way, the fact doesn't change that the landing spots are in the top three, and we all think they need quarterbacks, or at least would be willing to take one. So let's get into this and kind of decide where I think the best one, where the best fit is, because honestly, there's one here that's not like the others, I think, in some ways. So the Bears have the number one overall pick, and this is where I want to start. I think this is one of the best situations a number one pick could go into in a long time, maybe ever. Like, think about where the Bears are compared to where number one picks usually go. And I saw Nick Wright bring this point up, and you know, I don't usually agree with Nick Wright on a lot of things. We don't tend to have the same philosophy of thinking of sports, but I thought he made a good point on this the other day when I saw him talking about it. You know, the Bears were not the worst team in the NFL last year. They have the number one pick, but it's not theirs. Remember, it's Carolina's. They traded for that pick. So the Bears are going into this situation having been a 7-10 football team last year. And you go over some of the metrics, like Justin Fields, obviously, quarterback rating and all the different stuff. He was in, you know, the low to mid-20s as far as where he stands as a quarterback in the league last year. We know they didn't have great quarterback play. And when Fields was out, you know, they had guys who nobody had heard of. Tyson Bagent stepped in and started a few games, and they won some of those. Like, they played okay. So this is a unique situation. And, you know, when Caleb Williams was pushing back on wanting to go to Chicago and all this stuff earlier in, you know, the year, or at least his camp was saying stuff like that. Again, maybe it wasn't him actually putting it out there. I kind of disagree with him. Like, I kind of think this is where you would want to go as a number one pick, right? They were 7-10 last year. They were decent on the defensive side. They have some offensive playmakers. Let's talk about those playmakers. That's something we're going to break down for all three teams. I think, A, DJ Moore, you have a legit number one receiver. You know, look, Darnell Mooney, and we'll see if he's back, but there's been some, you know, I think a lot of potential there that hasn't fully been tapped into yet. You got a nice tight end in Cole Kmet. Their running game got a lot better last year. Like, I don't know, man. This isn't the worst situation to get into. I think offensive line-wise, they were okay, and they obviously have room to improve there. But it's not the typical disarray situation you're going to get into, even such as the next two spots. You have a head coach who's been there, has a little bit of stability, Matt Eberflus. Look, he was 3-14 his first season, 7-10 last year. You know, he took a step in the right direction. Now, one thing that we're going to talk about here, all three head coaches in the top three in the draft are defensive-minded coaches. If I'm a young quarterback, I would be thinking about that. Now, look, there's no options here. There's no offensive-minded guy. I would like an offensive-minded head coach if I was a rookie quarterback coming into the league, the way I see the league going right now. But, hey, there's been a lot of defensive-minded coaches that have been really successful as of late, too, and we'll see. But my point here early on is I don't think the Bears is the worst option. I think it's the best of the three. Now, let's go down the list here. We'll talk about Washington. You know, the Commanders, again, they're a team that wasn't great last year. We're well aware of that. They finished 4-13. Defensively, you always think the defensive line has some talent, some ability. They traded Chase Young away, and we'll see where kind of some of that heads. On the offensive side, I do think there's hope. You have some guys on the outside. Look, Terry McLaurin and Jahan Dotson, I think, have both proven that they can be really talented players in this league with the right pieces around them, so to speak. You could be okay here. I still like Antonio Gibson's skill set. The offensive line was a mess, and that's got to get cleaned up, no doubt about it. Now, you get a first-year head coach there in Dan Quinn, but he's a guy who has head coaching experience, so I think that can matter. He's been to the Super Bowl. He has been able to put really good offensive minds around him in the past when you think about, you know, the Falcons team that Matt Ryan had there, and you had Kyle Shanahan on that staff. So I don't think it's the worst situation to go into. I know it's RP3's team, and so we talk about him a little more than some of the other teams around the league, and I think that's unique. So I actually got a chance to watch them a good bit last year. And with Sam Howell and everything, it didn't fully work out, but I think you saw some signs there. Now, they've moved on from Bieniemy, so you're going to have a new offensive staff as well. But Washington, I think, is not, again, it's been an organization that's been dysfunctional for a long time, but there's some signs in place to make you think that things have changed in Washington. And so for a quarterback to go there, whether it's Jaden Daniels, again, you know, whether it's Drake May, or even if something weird happens at the top and Caleb Williams falls there, I don't think it's the worst. I think it's an okay situation. I can't believe I'm saying this, but I think the worst option of the three is to go to New England. And that's the last one here. You know, the Patriots, again, we know what happened there down the stretch with Bill Belichick. And it obviously wasn't ideal. They go 4-13 as well last season. The Mac Jones debacle was, you know, really bad for them, and I think they botched that. I don't know what the rest of Mac Jones' career is going to look like, to be honest with you. We'll see. But New England has some really interesting things here. Obviously, they have the most historical success of any of these three franchises. That's not close at all. They had the greatest quarterback of all time in Tom Brady run through there and do everything he accomplished. But let's kind of think about recent memory here for what's happened with New England. Go back to 2021. Belichick is trying to piece this thing together after Brady's departure, and they went into that offseason with a ton of cap space because you're not paying Brady anymore. You had a year, the COVID year, that kind of was a little bit wonky. But here we go. We got a chance to reset this. What does New England do? How about they go out and spend a record $163 million in free agency? And what are they going to do? They're going to address the pass catcher situation. They're going to go out and they're going to spend money on Hunter Henry and Jonnu Smith. And I'll be honest with you, I liked the idea at the time. I thought, man, maybe, you know, you're going a little old school here. Two tight end sets, like, we're going to run the football, but these guys are going to be dangerous down the field as well. You know, maybe we don't have elite receivers, but they spent some money also on guys like Kendrick Bourne. And look, when you have these two tight ends, Jonnu Smith, always kind of thought of if somebody could unlock that potential, he's one of the most athletic, freakish athletes in the league. He could do tremendous things at the tight end spot, right? It was not the way it was drawn up to work, and it just never really panned out for them. And, you know, Mac Jones had a promising rookie season. Obviously, we know what happened after that when you start talking of what happens down the line here. And they spent all that money on pass catchers and really had nothing to show for it. Now, again, Belichick's gone, so you have a dawning of a new age. But again, a defensive-minded head coach in Gerard Mayo, you got to see if he can make some offensive hires that are going to work out. You don't have that track record the way you at least kind of have with Dan Quinn. And also, again, you're always going to be playing in the shadow of Brady. Again, as time goes on, that'll fade. I think that we're seeing that with the Saints, right? Like, Derek Carr, I think, is still playing in the shadow of Drew Brees in some regards because the fan base and the expectations, you're just too close to it, right? The fan base and the ownership groups haven't seen enough bad quarterback play to remember what it's like to not have an all-time great there. So you're still dealing with that if you go to New England right now. Again, that defense was still piecing it together last year, wasn't bad. But now without Belichick, even though you have a defensive-minded coach who was on the staff in Gerard Mayo, I don't know how that goes. And so I think it's clear-cut for me. I would want to go to Chicago first, and I can't believe I'm saying that. I know the historical perspective of it. I know how bad they've been. But I would want to go there. And then from there, you look at Washington. I think it's not the worst situation. I think you can do things in that spot. And then after that, New England, I think, is where you're really going to struggle. And if I'm one of those top three guys, that's not where I want to go. So interestingly, once I thought through this, it changed the way I was kind of looking at the top of this draft class. And if you're Caleb Williams right now and it feels like you still have the pick of the litter, I'm pushing to go to Chicago. Again, the expectations are even lower based on where they've had quarterback play-wise. If he's just decent, he's going to be praised over there because they haven't had great quarterback play in the history of their franchise. So that's where I'm going. I'm going to Chicago, and I'm trying to build something in the Windy City.
Time for us to head back out to Walk On Sports Bistro for more RP3, D'Lo and Mesh, here on ESPN 103.7 Lafayette and 104.1 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station.
Welcome back to RP3, D'Lo and Mesh, as you're listening to ESPN 103.7 Lafayette and 104.1 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana sports station, broadcasting live today from Walk-Ons on Colley Saloon, as we do every Friday. We've had a pretty good show so far. We even just finished up D-Lo's details talking about the NFL. But let's go over to the college ranks, specifically looking at those McNeese Cowboys. And to talk about those pokes, we got on the great one, Jimmy G from LC, Jim Gazzolo.
The greatest.
Of the American Press. How you doing, Jim?
I'm doing fine, boys. How you doing?
Oh, we're doing absolutely phenomenal. I think it would be a disservice for us to not at least start with the men's basketball team as they finished up regular season play as they get ready for the Southland Conference next week. But, Jim, I am kind of curious, based off of what you've seen, the fact that they've made this huge turnaround, they went from 23 losses to they have a very good chance of getting 30 wins in just 1 year's change, with the fan base rallying around this basketball team, and you've been able to see it, how amazing has it felt for you being kind of like an outsider, but also being able to see the team consistently and been able to get to know Will Wade over this past year?
Well, it's been an interesting time because I found a different Will Wade than what I was expecting, a different Will Wade than I covered on the few times I saw him at LSU, a much more humbled guy, a different guy, kind of a grown-up Will Wade. So that's the biggest thing. As far as the fan base goes, this is just a fan base that was dying to have something good to happen to it in anything. It's a community that's been beat up, and they were just looking for anything good, and they found it in Will Wade, a basketball team, and they embraced them, and the team embraced the community. It's kind of a strange thing to see, considering most of the kids had never stepped foot on Lake Charles soil until the summer, but how much they've embraced each other and kind of forged this relationship.
Yeah, it's amazing because Christian Shumate was the only returning guy from last year's team. So you've got a bunch of change from before. You would think, okay, well, guys are probably going to take some time to get used to each other. Well, no, they've been playing like how they've been playing for what, 3-4 years? Like, it just feels like the chemistry has just been there since day one. Like, was that just a huge surprise to you, considering we kind of expected a big turnaround, like Will Wade had mentioned? He thought they were going to get at least 23 wins. Definitely exceeded it, but we thought there was going to be at least a little bit of time for them to get used to each other.
Yeah, I think the thing that was the most is I started to hear some things in the summer about how much stuff they were doing off the basketball floor together and how much that was bringing them together. And I was like, okay, they're going to be a well-knit team. They all kind of have second chances, good stories. So we'll see. Maybe by mid-Christmas they'll be together and that. But they really gelled on the floor, too. And I think that's the biggest surprise of all, is how quickly they were able to do that and how they did it with, you know, Will Wade wasn't coaching them for the first 10 games in games anyway, and how they did it kind of forge this relationship off the floor instead of on it.
And I think what's really interesting now is the fact that they finished the season 28-3. They're now getting into the conference tournament, Southland Conference tournament. They're going to have the bye. They're not going to play again until Tuesday night. We'll be there, or at least I'll be there with you, so you'll have plenty of company. But
yeah,
are
wait,
they
wait a minute. Are you going to be able to try to dunk the mini ball again like I saw on video?
It was not a mini ball. I just went straight hand. There was no mini ball. In fact, I never got a mini ball. I was not a part of the fandom. But specifically looking at the tournament, McNeese has to be the favorite, I assume. I know that Coastal Carolina is likely going to give a tough matchup, but with them being likely the favorites, say they do end up falling in this tournament and they are not the winners, do you think that they still have a good shot of still making the NCAA tournament, or do they have to win the Southland tournament to be able to get in?
Welcome to the NIT. No, I think they have to win the tournament to get in. There's a small chance, obviously, if utter chaos surrounded the rest of the NCAA, maybe a 2-3% chance, I'll give it. But it would have to be just utter chaos, because they're going to lose so many points in the net and all that. When they lose the game, it will take them out of the prime position they're in. If there was some way they could lose the game and not lose in the net, yeah, they'd have a chance. But that wouldn't happen. So they have to win. There's pressure on them. There's no question about it.
We're talking with Jim Gazzolo of the Lake Charles American Press. He joins us here on RP3 D'Lo and Mesh as we broadcast live from Walk-Ons on Colley Saloon. Okay, so we know what's at stake here for Will Wade's team. I like the fact that they had to go on the road to kind of wrap up the regular season. And he kind of sidestepped that question when I asked him on Monday after the game. But how much do you think that kind of helps them kind of reset things and not get too comfortable being at home, which they will be for the conference tournament on Tuesday and hopefully on Wednesday?
I think the fact that that UNO had to play hard to try to get in, even though they backed it anyway, I think that was the challenge. They couldn't really let up, and that was a tough spot for them. Do you let up? Do you rest some people? You had played 3 games in 5 days, but you're not going to play for another 5-6 days anyway. Do you let them rest, or you try to get as much work they could do so that there's not this rust factor going in? Now they have 2 days off. They had yesterday off. They'll have today off. and they'll get back to work tomorrow. But it's a touchy situation because they have some teams that have played them well at times, and they have moments where they do not score the basketball. They are. I put out a piece today that the four teams that can compete against them and why. So there's a chance that this could fall apart.
You look at the bracket. Nichols, by the way, what they were able to do to gut out a win like they did. They vaulted all the way up to the 3 seed, and I know there was a lot of talk of wanting that matchup of Nichols on their side of the bracket. They don't get that. Nichols is on the side of the bracket with 2-time defending tournament champion Texas A&M Corpus Christi. So it looks like they will have to more than likely face Lamar, and then more than likely possibly have to face A&M Corpus Christi in the title game. Is that the most difficult path that they could possibly have for them, Jim?
They will not say this publicly, but that's not what they wanted. That is a back-to-back, very physical game. There's 3 very physical teams in this league, 4 if you count Commerce, and McNeese is one of them. Now, they would have liked to have avoided back-to-back physical games, what Will Wade calls tractor pulls, and get some racing doing up and down the floor. They get that with Nichols. Nichols doesn't match up well with McNeese because they're going to open up the floor with them. Southeastern did beat McNeese at Southeastern, so they can shoot the basketball. So those 2 things can happen, but physicality-wise and getting beat up to play back-to-back days, you didn't want to go be the one to have to play 2 of the 3, and they've got it. They've got to do it.
As it stands today, do you think it will happen? Do you think when it's all said and done next Wednesday night that the McNeese Cowboys will be Southland Conference tournament champions and have punched their ticket to the NCAAs?
Yeah, because I think that they're the favorite, and they're at home, and they're 16-0 at home, and they've beaten everybody pretty easily at home by 19 points in the league, 26 overall. So, yeah, I would have to favor them considerably, but it's not a slam dunk. It's not what a lot of people, I think, around here believe. I think there's going to be 2 games that are going to come down to the last 7-8 minutes of each game, because that's the nature of how the teams are going to play against. Now, if they can get it opened up like they did against the 2 teams here, that was a big, they could spread it out a little bit in both games. But when they played them on the road, those were knockdown, drag out, 1-point, 2-point game fights. And that I assume that's what's going to be in the tournament.
All right, bud, I want to get you out of here with this. Spring football began earlier this week. Yourself and us, James and I, were there to kind of catch a little bit of practice. And it's the first week of spring football.
Both of you were on hand, I might notice.
Well, that's correct. Hey, we were out there. Television wasn't out there, but we were. Just saying. First day of spring football, we were there representing. What do you expect to see, if anything at all, from Gary Goff and his staff and this team during spring football after such a disappointing year last year?
Better execution. I think the fact that they have 92 players out there with only 4 or 5 on, not healthy, I think they've put a emphasis on getting bigger in the weight room, and they are. Depth is a big thing. So I think that will lead to better execution. I don't think we'll see kind of the flair that we saw last year. I think we're going to see more of a grit and grind approach to this. And he's been very open in saying we're going to be simple and do things right. And I think that's the approach they have to take at this point.
Jim, always appreciate your time, brother. Enjoy your weekend. We'll see you next week over in Lake Charles. Be safe out there, and we'll see you then, bud.
Yeah, we're going to have a mini hoop on the court for James next time.
Oh, thank you, James. Jim Gazzello of the Lake Charles American Press joining us here talking all things McNeese. We got to take a time out. When we come back, we'll get an update on the poll question of the day, courtesy of BP back in the EVCO Development Studios, and we'll get you set up for the Jordy Holberg Show. That's all next right here on RP3, D-Lo and Mesh.
RP3, D-Lo and Mesh are tackling the topics of the day live from Walk-On Sports Bistro. This is ESPN, 1037 Lafayette and 1041 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station.
Oh, welcome back in as we wrap up today's show. got a few minutes here to spare. Obviously, the Louisiana Raging Cajuns will be gearing up to take on Arkansas State in the quarterfinals of the Sun Belt Conference tournament. That is going to be tomorrow. I misspoke. I thought it was tonight. The women play tonight. The men are going to play tomorrow in Pensacola. And look, Bob Marlin's team, they didn't get the top four seed. They had to settle, get into as the five, which means they have to play the extra game. And they took care of business against Coastal Carolina. The Chanticleers, the angry sea roosters, as I like to call them, were no match for the Raging Cajuns. And this is what the veteran coach, Bob Marlin, had to say about his team getting the win over Coastal Carolina there in Pensacola.
Thought the game went the way we thought it would go. They got a good offensive team, and they're playing a little bit shorthanded, and that was about the spread that I felt like it would be. And we were able to close out the game the way we needed to. So happy for that. We made a couple of three-point shots at the right times, and our three-point defense was good again. They go 3 for 20, and we turned them over 16 times, which was important. We only had 8. So thought all our guys played, did a good job. We shot a good percentage from the floor, and we rebounded with them for the most part.
So by winning the game against Coastal, now they get to play Arkansas State. Now, look, old school rivalry. These two teams have faced each other a ton. Here's the thing. The Cajuns did take down the Red Wolves both times they played this year. Can they do it 3 in a row, though? In both of those games, Raging Cajuns did very nice taking away the three-pointer from Arkansas State. They live and die by the three. That's how they play their game. They love shooting it up, jacking up threes. They only made a handful in both of those contests. And this is Bob Marlin talking about Saturday's matchup against those Red Wolves.
Both these guys played well against Arkansas State, certainly in Jonesboro and in Lafayette. So we have a lot of respect for them. They're a much better team than some of the teams in our league, and it doesn't surprise me that they slipped into that fourth spot. But very good offensive team, and we were able to control them by having a low volume of three-point shots made, and that's what we'll have to do on Saturday.
So there you go. Make sure to check out ESPNSouthwestLouisiana.com. For all the news out there, we got James Mesh's first mock draft. That's available right now. And we'll have coverage this weekend of the Raging Cajun men and women from the Sun Belt Conference Tournament. We'll have LSU women from the SEC Tournament and so much more. So make sure to go check that out. I want to take a moment to thank our guest today, Corey Diaz from the Daily Advertiser, talking LSU. I want to thank Jim Gazzolo from the Lake Charles American Press, talking all things McNeese. Before we get out of here, BP back in the EFCO Development Studios on this now rainy and dark afternoon. Brother, give me just an update. What are the latest results on the poll question of the day?
Strawberry is still holding strong at 62.5%, blueberry 21.9%, raspberry has fallen to 6.3%, and other has risen to 9.4%.
Keep those votes coming. Keep those comments coming on Facebook and on X. And BP and James Mesh will share it throughout the Jordy Holberg Show. That's going to do it for us today. We'll be back on the air Monday, 11-1. But until then, be safe out there. Be kind to one another. The Jordy Holberg Show with the Blonde Bomber himself. Jordy Holberg is up next right here on ESPN Southwest Louisiana Sports Station.